Good afternoon. My name is Liz and I'm an alcoholic. Please help me open this meeting with a moment of silent meditation, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So I want to welcome all of you to part three of GSR orientation. Who of you have been here for the last couple of GSR orientations? Very good. Thank you very much for continuing to show up. So I'm going to get a show of hands of all these different people here in a minute. All right. So this is a three-part thing. Several years ago, when Patty L. was delegate, they made the decision to standardize this presentation so that every new GSR gets the same information throughout the year. And so I have just taken this presentation and made it kind of mine. And you're able to access this presentation on our AA Georgia.org website, and this will tell you how to get there. So this is the website, and this is the main page of the website, and you'll see the arrow. It says assembly. So if you would click on that link, you'll find at the bottom of the next page all three various PDFs. And this is an older picture. So they all say 2023 now. All three presentations are now available online at the website. And you do not need a password to access that. So you should be able to download that and look at that at any point in time if you need the information. The GSR. So Bill Wilson had some things to say about the GSR. He felt like the GSR was the most important member of our service structure, and he says that the strength of our whole AA service structure starts with the group and with the general service representative, our GSR, that the group elects. And he says, I cannot emphasize too strongly the importance of the GSR. So we need to take a look at why GSRs are important, but first, I want to know who's here. So is there anyone here as a new GSR who's never been here as a GSR before? Good for you. Yay. So I put some handouts in front of the podium right down here specifically for you. It looks like this. And what this is a list of materials that will be useful to you as a GSR. Now, normally when you're a new GSR, you'll register with GSSA, with Tamara at the state office, and she will submit that information to GSO, and they will eventually send you a welcome packet as a GSR. It's the eventually part. And so in order for you to access that information, I went ahead and had this printed out for you so that you can go online and get these downloadable for free pieces of information should you need them before your welcome packet actually arrives, because it could be a hot minute.
So there you go.
All right, so who have we got here that is a first-year GSR, period? Second-year GSR? A little bit fewer? Okay. How about any alternate GSRs? There you go. Look at that. Okay. How many of you have been a GSR before and you're going in for round two, three, four, or five? There you go. Never hurts, right? And who is here just because you want to learn something new? So we've got a little bit of everybody. And there's a couple people up front who can't possibly learn anything new because I learned what I know from them. So there you go. Am I going the right way? Okay, so in January, we talked about the qualifications and duties of the GSR, how to make motions at assembly, and concepts 1 and 2. Then back in May, we talked about what it looks like to nominate someone, what those procedures are like, voting in elections, and we will go over that again because we will be experiencing that tomorrow, and concepts 3, 5, and 9. And today we're going to be talking about the voting in elections again, specifically the election part, because we haven't had an in-person actual election since COVID. So last year when we had secretary and treasurer, we had only one person standing, so we didn't actually go through the election process. We just approved. So this will be your first one if this is your first time, and it's very interesting. We're also going to talk a little bit about group inventory and service sponsorship. So we're going to start with the recap on part one, why the GSR is important. and concepts 1 and 2. So the GSR is important because the GSR is the voice of the group conscience, and you are the person who's going to elect all of your state officers and your delegate who will speak on your behalf as a whole at the General Service Conference in the spring of every year. And so right now you have Tracy M., who is your current delegate, and she represented you this year and last year at the General Service Conference, and you voted for her, or your predecessor voted for her. In concept 2, and it talks about the importance of the group conscience, okay? And I want you to take a look at what it says. It says, when in 1955 the AA groups confirmed the permanent charter for their General Service Conference, they thereby delegated to the conference complete authority for the active maintenance of our world services and thereby made the conference, excepting for any change in the 12 traditions or Article 12 of the conference charter, the actual voice and the effective conscience of our whole group. So in layman's terms, and let's just put that in a very simple way, Bill and Bob knew they were not going to be around forever. And so Bill created the conference structure to speak on behalf of what we used to use as Bill and Bob all those years ago. And so instead of having founding members to go to as the old-timers, we now have this entire body of people, and when we get up to conference, it's generally about 133-ish people who are voting that speak on behalf of what Bill and Bob used to speak for. And they direct the trustees to do whatever the trustees have been asked to do. And they are the people who see it through. A concept study would be great, I'm just saying. Okay. So you're important, as we said before, because you are responsible for electing. You're the actual voice of the conference, which is your delegate. And one group, one voice, one vote. You are the only ones who can vote at the assembly meeting tomorrow morning. So any actions that come to the floor, only your voice can be heard in the voting process. Anybody's voice can be heard in the discussion part. Okay, so anybody can talk about it, but only you get to vote on it. So the qualifications and duties are actually found in our service manual. Who has one of these? Is there anybody who doesn't have one of these? Okay, these should be available to you at Tamara's desk, which is going to be the one all the way on this side of the room, and they are free. Okay, so this is what we use that guides how we function here at GSSA. This big red one is the World Service Manual. You'll also find the concepts in the back of this. Most of what we're going to talk about today, though, is going to be out of this book because this is how we function here in Georgia. So you will find the qualifications and the duties, and you can read them for yourselves. And like I said, this is going to be available to you on the website, and this is just a review. So what is the role of the GSR? It's your role to make motions. Only GSRs can bring a motion to the floor. Only GSRs can nominate people. And we do have a different nomination process for delegate. And when we have the polling of the DCMs, we'll talk about that in a minute. The alternate GSR acts in place of the GSR in the GSR's absence. So actually, if the GSR can't be here and the alternate GSR is there in their stead, they are, in fact, acting as GSR for their group at that specific assembly. So, part two. So we're going to be electing a delegate tomorrow, and that's part of what we're doing as a GSR. You elect our delegate, our alternate delegate, and we're going to go through that process. We had nominations in May, so those of you who are here in May, you got to see what that looked like. So every DCM who was a second-year DCM was asked to come to the mic and declare whether or not they were willing to stand for delegate. And we did have two DCMs who said that they were willing to stand for delegate. So they are in the election for tomorrow. And after that closed, then nominations came from the floor, and we had a few other people nominated as well. So it's important that we nominate a qualified candidate. So if you want to know what the qualifications are for secretary, treasurer, delegate, alternate delegate, they too can be found in here. And there have been some questions about some of the wording in some of this, and so there are some motions on the floor about that right now too. So if you have questions about that, I would encourage you to talk to your DCM about it. if you're not familiar with what's going on and what's going to be voted on tomorrow with respects to all of that. But, you know, before you nominate someone, be sure they're willing to stand. That's really important, because I was nominated years ago for a job that I already said yes to something else, and I had to actually come up to this microphone in another venue and say, you know, I have to, you know, politely decline, because I've already accepted GSR for my home group, you know. So those are the kinds of things we need to look at. So we've got the third legacy voting procedure, which I'm going to go over, but first I want to talk about what it's going to look like, okay? So this is what's going to happen tomorrow. You're going to be sitting in specific places. Like, if you've been to an assembly before, you already know what that looks like. They're all lined up by district and zone. Your DCM sits in one place. All the group GSRs sit in that same row. And somebody is going to run around, and they're going to pass out ballots. And what it's going to look like is going to be little slips of paper about this big, and there are going to be about five or six of them that are stapled together, and each piece of paper is going to be a different color. And they will tell you what color we're using for this vote. So the first one, maybe we'll just say it's white. And they'll say, okay, you're going to use the white ballot, and I want you to write down on your ballot the name of the candidate you want to vote for. So you're going to write down one of the names. They'll have them listed up here so you'll know who they are. You'll write down one of the names, you'll fold up the piece of paper, and you'll hand it back to your DCM, who's going to throw it in a basket. The basket's going to come up here, and our current chairperson, Debbie Kay, is going to start pulling those things out of the hat, and she's going to start naming off names. John, Jane, Fred, whatever it is that's coming out of the basket. And on one side of the podium, I'm not sure where they're putting it yet, there'll be a great big whiteboard, and there will be somebody literally tallying under each person. It is a slow process, and it sounds tedious and time-consuming, right? It is. But let me tell you what happens in the room, okay? There are people in the back of the room that are tallying along with them. There's conversations going on. Everybody gets real excited when they see, oh, there's another vote for so-and-so. And this is where the camaraderie of the body comes into play. And if you're as excited about service as I am, you might be one of those ones back there tallying yourself. Because that's one of the things I used to always do. And there are people around me watching me because they can't see what's going on up here, you know. And I'm hoping that maybe it'll be a little bit better and you can actually see, because we have these viewing posts that we didn't have before, so everybody can see what's going on. But the person who's tallying is only one of the people who are actually responsible for tallying. There'll be other people up here who will tally, and at the end we all have to agree, okay, in order for the vote to carry, okay? And so that's what's going to happen. That's what it's going to look like, all right? So I'm going to go back one, I think. Okay, I'm going to go back one, and then this is how it goes, okay? So everybody who is on the ballot is standing for delegate. Nobody is standing for alternate delegate. Everybody is standing for delegate, okay? So everybody is standing for delegate and will have the first vote. And everybody that's on the ballot is on the ballot. And you need to write down whoever your group has asked you to vote for, and you'll pass that up and we'll go through the process we just talked about. And if we have a two-thirds majority for a single candidate, we are done. Okay? If we don't, we're going to go through the process again. And then they're going to tell you, okay, this time you're using the orange paper or whatever color it is, because I don't know what colors they're using. But you got me, right? And you're going to go through the process again. And it has been my observation over time that once you see how it's going, votes start changing a little bit and we start narrowing it down. So after the second ballot, if we still don't have two-thirds, well, we're going to eliminate somebody. We're going to eliminate anybody who is less than one-fifth of the vote. They will come off the ballot. So let's say we've got six candidates to begin with. Now we're down to four. All right? So now we're down to four candidates, and we're going to vote again. And this time you're going to use the yellow paper, and you write down the name of the person who's left, you know, and so on and so forth. So after the third ballot, if we do not have one, then they're going to remove some more people. They're going to remove anybody who had less than a third. And ultimately, you'll get down to the place where there's probably two. And it doesn't always happen like this. I've only ever seen it go three ballots. I don't think I've ever seen it go past three ballots. But don't say that. Oh, my God. It could go all day. But if it actually came to it, where we could not as a body make a decision by a two-thirds majority between two candidates. Both names would go in the hat, and we would draw a name from the hat. Because what that means is that these people are equally qualified, and God is in charge, which ultimately, no matter what, God is in charge. Okay, so that's how that thing is going to look. So now you're going to have a new delegate. Ha-ha, yay, whoever that turns out to be, right? Now you've got five people left. Now they are standing for alternate delegate. And the process begins again. I hear this moan. Oh, my God. I know the football game is on tomorrow. I don't know which football game it is, but I know there is one. All right? But remember, what you're doing tomorrow is you are electing a person to speak on not only your behalf, but on behalf of everybody in your group. You have a great responsibility. Use it wisely. Whatever your group has asked you to do, that's what you need to do. So, that's what you're going to do tomorrow. I'm excited. I know y'all aren't, but I am. Okay, so concept three, the right of decision. If you tomorrow find that your candidate is no longer on the ballot and your group has said, I want you to vote for this person, and they haven't given you any other more directions, and these are who you have left, you get to decide. That is your right of decision, okay? You get to decide from whoever is left if your candidate is no longer on the ballot. Concept five, this will not come up tomorrow during elections. It may come up tomorrow if we're voting on another motion, okay? We do not have minority opinion during elections, but we do have minority opinion during any motion that we're voting on. So I think we do have a motion that we're voting on tomorrow with respect to some wording that we have for the qualifications for delegate. So we'll vote, and if you voted in the minority and you want to speak on that, you're welcome to come to the mic. The chairperson will ask for minority opinion. So you'll get to come to the mic and give that minority opinion if you choose to do so. Service leadership. Now, this is something else that I've placed down here in front of you. This is Bill's essay on leadership, and you will find that in the concepts in the back of the big red book as well. And it talks about the importance of leadership and what that leadership should look like. And, you know, it's a lot of scary language in here. There really is. Like, you need to be prepared to look for the future and be all these things that are like, oh, my God, I don't have vision. I don't have all of that. You know, all I am is here. Well, guess what? You're doing your job. Just suit up and show up. And by the time you're ready to rotate out, you'll just about know exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Okay, so that's my recap from the first two. Does anybody have any questions regarding the first two that you may have missed or needed to ask before and didn't get to before I move on to today's stuff? You're not coming to the mic? Okay.
No.
All right. No, I'm not. All right. Okay. So part three has to do with the responsibilities of the area trusted servants, and we're going to go over each one of those. We're going to talk a little bit about service sponsors and group inventories. So we have an office committee, and the office committee consists of our elected people and our office manager. So first is our delegate. Right now, our delegate is Tracy M. She will be rotating out at the end of the year, and whoever you elect tomorrow will be your new delegate. And what her job is she represents you at the conference, and she gives you reports here. She also goes to the cluster forums and any other area events and gives reports there as well. The alternate delegate, which is currently Tom B., and we hope that maybe Tom B. will be our next delegate. That would be ideal, right? That's kind of the historical trend. So Tom B. also comes to the assembly, and he'll give you reports of a different kind. He'll talk to you about the area events. He'll let you know about the DCM outreach program. He helps with the convention. That's kind of his purview, as well as cluster forums. So, and when a DCM is getting ready to present for a cluster forum or present or wants to present for a state convention, they can call their alternate delegate, and the alternate delegate will be able to answer those questions. And if not, they'll get them in touch with somebody who can. Then we have the your chairperson, which right now is Debbie Kay, and she actually chairs the meeting in here tomorrow morning. She's been chairing them for the last 2 years. And Debbie Kay is our past delegate. She's the immediate past delegate before Tracy. And so what she does is she does this, she plans this, and if you need to make a motion on the floor, you would talk to her, bring that motion to her, and she would help you word that motion into such a way that you can achieve your ideal. That's part of what she does. She also plans the agenda for tomorrow for the business meeting. Let's see. And then we have the office committee chairperson, which would have been the immediate past chairperson. So next year it's going to be Debbie Kay. This year it's not the immediate past chairperson because our immediate past chairperson moved out of state. And his name was Rick M. And he was the delegate preceding Debbie. So we had a special election in order to fill that position. So David M., and if you were in the Assembly 101 this morning, that's David M. He is our current office committee chairperson. So the office committee meets on a regular basis. He chairs those meetings, and he sees to the functioning of our actual area office, which is in Macon, where Tamara works. And Tamara is going to be coming up here in a minute. The next elected position is going to be your area secretary, which we currently do not have. But tomorrow you will be affirming one. Okay? So you will have a new secretary after tomorrow because the current or the secretary that we had stepped down back in the spring. Don't remember exactly when. And so we'll have a new area secretary after tomorrow as well. And our treasurer, Todd B., who has been so kind as to try and take over to the best of his ability the secretary's duties in addition to his own until we fill that position, he is also on the committee. And it's pretty simple to see. The secretary takes minutes. You know, they do a workshop. They come to all the events. The treasurer does the same thing, except they don't do minutes. They do reports on the treasury. And so basically their jobs are parallel. They just have different responsibilities. Then the state office manager, which is Tamara, and she's been our office manager for several years, and she is fabulous. And it's got all these different things that she does. One of the things it doesn't say on here that she does is she organizes this right here, this whole assembly, the rooms that are made available, the room blocks, where we're going to put what, getting everything in place, having all these copies that are available to you. Tomorrow when you come in the room is all set up. Tamara does all of that. Right? She is amazing, and I hope that you will take the time to thank her for her service at some point this weekend, because she's remarkable. She does so much. She also has an assistant that's part-time. She is not a part of the office committee, but she does help Tamara out a good bit. Okay, so what is a service sponsor? Who here actually has a service sponsor? Wow. So if you do not have a service sponsor, I would highly recommend that you look into that, okay? Because I can tell you that the service sponsor for me did for me in service what a regular sponsor did for me in recovery. See, the regular sponsor for me in recovery taught me how to be sober one day at a time. And my service sponsor taught me how to do service. And over time, I've had a couple, and I have always looked to people who are doing the service that I am wanting to do or I am currently doing. And so, in reality, my primary sponsor doesn't have the service background that my service sponsor has. And years ago, I had a primary sponsor who wasn't well and a service sponsor who took me everywhere and brought me to my very first assembly when we were at the Crown Plaza in Macon. Who's been around that long? Remember that place? Wasn't that gobs of fun? Oh, my God, the ice cream alone. So, yeah, she taught me about the assembly, and I was doing corrections work, and she got me in touch with people who were doing corrections work so I could learn what I was doing. She brought me where I needed to be and introduced me to the people I needed to know in order to be able to do the job that I had been asked to do, service sponsorship. Okay? So if you are a GSR and you want to know more about being a GSR, talk to someone who's been a GSR. Because, by the way, who needs to mention that by the time they rotated out, they knew what they were doing. Right? So now they'll be able to help you. They'll be able to tell you what to do because they've learned from their own experience. So that is what service sponsorship has done for me. I'm getting ready to have a moment. So my service sponsor, her name was Betty Baker. She's passed away. She taught me everything that I needed to know about being of service. She didn't tell me. She showed me. She brought me. She led me. She guided me. I would wish nothing less for you. Find you a good service sponsor. You will not regret it. So, the group inventory. Who has participated in a group inventory? Oh, a lot of you. Very good. So, there is actually a group inventory suggested in the group, the AA group pamphlet. I have facilitated several group inventories, and I've seen it done in a variety of ways. You can use the questions that are in the group pamphlet. You could use the 12 and 12, the 12 traditions. Whatever you can use the same questions your group has been using for the last 50 years. Whatever it is your group decides is how your group needs to do that group inventory. Just like anything else, it's all suggested. Nothing is carved in stone. So there are multiple methods for doing a group inventory. The most important thing we need to know about doing a group inventory is that we're trying to find where we can improve our group to better carry the message to the new man walking in the door. So these are actually the questions that you'll find on pages 29 and 30 of the group pamphlet that are suggested inventory questions. You do not have to use these, but these are suggested. So I would, they're up here. Again, they're in the pamphlet. You'll be able to find them on the website. Gosh, I feel like there should be more information. This is all the information I was asked to give you. Now, we are going to talk about using the traditions to solve group problems. But before I do that, Tamara gave me some things to give away. So I'm going to have three trivia questions, and the first person to the mic with the right answer will get the prize. All right? Question number one. Wait a minute. Here comes the Mike Turner honor person. There we go. What does GSR actually stand for? Service Representative. I'm sorry?
I just lost it.
I said it and I lost it. No!
General Service Representative.
Yes, ma'am. You are right. Stand up here. All right. Question number two. How many votes are required to elect a delegate at this assembly?
2/3.
Very good. Stand up here. Question number three. What does GSSA actually stand for?
Georgia State Service Assembly.
Yes. Well, you have now. You can't say that anymore. Yay! Tam was like, find a home for these. And she's like, have a little contest. And I'm like, okay, we can do that. That'd be so much fun. All right. The traditions in solving group problems. So I have been given a few scenarios. These are not ones that I came up with. These were the ones that were given to me. And so we're going to go through these. And then if you have some of your own, I would invite you to the microphone so that we can talk about them. Okay? The first one. So here's the 12 traditions. Y'all know those, right? The first one. There's a group member that comes early to set up and talks to a church member about politics. Okay, so he is the AA member that this church member sees. He had a very radical view about that may have been misconstrued as AA's opinion since he was the AA guy setting up the meeting. So what tradition applies to this situation? Well, it says, it gives you the answer, tradition 10, because we have no opinion on outside issues. So you've heard that saying that we may be the only big book that somebody sees. Well, guess what? If you're the AA member setting up for that meeting and the person that's coming to you from the church doesn't know anything about AA, you are, in fact, AA to that person at that moment. How are you going to conduct yourself? The old timer. Who continually brings small gifts for new members of the opposite sex, calls them, asks them to go out. So what tradition applies? Tradition 1. Our common welfare should come first. And they call that 13th stepping. So here's one that I see frequently. A halfway house brings residents to the meeting. They behave badly. They're disruptive. So the meeting usually has 6 to 10 residents that sit together, talk, and get up constantly. And what tradition applies? The same one. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. The whole is more important than the sum of its parts. So, you know, we can talk to these people, and I have seen this situation resolve in a variety of ways, and it's going to be ultimately how your group conscience decides how to deal with it. So I've seen it where they've gone and talked to the halfway house or the treatment center and said, this is what's going on. How can we, you know, get a little bit more attention here? I've seen it where one group has taken and separated them out and said, we're going to have a beginner's meeting. Y'all come up over here so that we can have a regular meeting over here and a beginner's meeting over there. I've seen that. You know, and I have seen them where they've said, okay, we're going to stop. We're going to come to you. Our group is going to come to you however many days a week, and we're going to bring a meeting to you. So, I mean, there are a variety of solutions that can be offered. So these are the three scenarios I was asked to bring. And so now the floor is open for you. Do you have any questions? And if you do, please come to the microphone. Okay, that works.
My name is Alcoholic, and I'm a Cornell. I from early Saturday morning meeting in Decatur. It might be a silly question, but you talk about group sponsors. What is it? A service sponsor. Okay, where would you find one?
Well, you know, if you don't know anyone, I would start by asking your DCM. But if you need one, who in this room is eligible and willing to be a service sponsor? There you go. Anyone else?
My name is T. I'm an alcoholic, Albany Central Group, or Albany, Georgia. Well, we have a question, and I want to bring this, whether it's, this is appropriate or not. About big book study, how can we improve our big book study? They're so boring, we do the same thing. Maybe someone has some ideas about that, how to improve our big book study.
Well, it's hard to improve on something you're not, like, filled in on, you know. But if you need to do a group inventory on it to take a look at what you feel like needs to happen, that might be a good option for you, is to go back to that group inventory and ask for each person. And you might want to narrow the questions down to how they apply to the actual meeting, that specific meeting. If the group is doing well and this is the only meeting part of it that's not doing well, let's inventory that and see what could be improved. And you'll find, I have found, that in the group inventory process, people will say things anonymously on a piece of paper that they're not willing to say out loud in front of other people. And then you can get that piece of input that might be the thing that saves the meeting. This one? It's pointed straight up? Okay, can you tilt it some? Thank you. Thank you. I learned something today. Okay. Did I answer the question for you? Okay. Come to the mic, please.
I'd suggest going to as many other big book meetings in your area.
There you go.
And just see what's working at other places. It might spark an idea between you and your community.
There you go. Good suggestion. Thank you so much. Yes, please, come to the mic.
It's not my home group, but I go to another group meeting, and actually it's the Triangle Club in Atlanta. And what they do, and I find it seems to be really working well, is that they read a part of where we are,
mm-hmm.
and then we allow time for discussion,
okay,
which really, really gets all of the people in the meeting involved. And we take turns reading also. So, I mean, to me, that was a really good way of keeping it from being boring, especially.
All right, and I do encourage anybody who has a suggestion, please come to the microphone and share it, because we can't do anything better than help each other, right? Oh, you want me to announce the Big Book Weekend? That's okay. I think we have flyers for this out on Lee's table, don't we? Please pick one of these up on the way out. There you go. It's a big book weekend. It's not like a regular big book study, because he's talking about like in a group where they'll go through the book in a little bit slower. This is like the whole weekend, go through the whole thing, or at least the first 164 usually. Yes.
I'm William Glass, GSR of the Tocoa Group. I've been to some big book studies where all they do is just read a couple chapters, and then they discuss on that instead of reading the whole chapter. Because after a while, it starts getting boring. But if you read a couple paragraphs, discuss it, and then read a couple more, it makes it a little more interesting. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Meg. I'm an alcoholic. Something that we had a lot of success with in one of the big book studies I participated in is round robin. So rather than a lot of big book studies that I go to will read a big chunk and open for discussion on the whole thing. So what we do is, the chair will read a paragraph and share specifically on that and then pass it. The next person will read a paragraph, share specifically on that, and then pass it. What that does is it takes away from the canned responses to, the same thing they've heard other people say in meetings. And it brings a lot of, life to things that people don't necessarily tap into all the time. And then when you go through the whole, the whole room has now shared by the end of it. And then we open it up for about 10 minutes at the end for a general discussion on everything that we read. That's the most fun big book study I've been a part of. And I chair a boring one, and I sit in on that one, too. So I like that one a lot, if that's an idea for you.
John, Zone 13F. I really appreciate that question. I think one of our biggest problems overall is we're dwindling away from traditions, which is when we hear people say it's boring or it's not moving forward. And a lot of that is because we're lacking sponsorship. And I think to really make a group work great, and especially any meeting, is whoever is chairing the meeting, depending on how you do your meetings. If you're bringing in a discussion leader, what's always worked for me is to attend as many meetings outside of my group and my clubhouse. And I recommend this to anyone that I work with. Get phone numbers every time you go to a meeting, because the worst thing to do is show up at your group and ask somebody that's been in your group for 20 years to help lead the meeting when, you could call 10 or 20 other people, and especially in advance, have them come in and do their interpretation, but also the other suggestions are really what it's about. It's read a little. You have to read the whole thing, because anybody reads about three paragraphs, you're already losing them. So I suggest sometimes just read one sentence and elaborate. But it's all because we are missing sponsorship and traditions. And I think all of us need to really revamp and get back on that board, because traditions are what really keeps us together. And I'll say this. People hate when I say it. There's only one step that takes us into the other 24 options that keep us strong, and that's the 12th step. It's only the beginning, in my opinion. Everything else before is all about me. After that, it's about us. And that's the only reason I even got here. I thought I came here just to stop drinking, and they hit me. It was a sucker punch. They got me doing this service, and now I'm trying to figure out the rest of the damn thing. So, hey, stay tuned. More will be revealed.
Thank you so much.
Hey, family, my name is Sandra, and I'm an alcoholic from 10B, Faith New Beginning Group.
Can you get a little closer to the microphone?
Oh, please?
Thank you very much.
Okay. I get bored in some of those meetings, and I've had a few 24 hours, and I love the book. And I have found out it's because it's the same people that always read, and the chairperson calls on Kathy every time after she shares. I love to see the newcomer. Put them on the spot. Let them read, you know, and because they are seeing something different that they've never experienced before. But another way, what the gentleman before Tulsa, when I was newly sober, they would read a paragraph, and that person could share on that paragraph. And if you wanted to share, you read.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 7 o'clock in the morning meeting, so only diehards made it to that anyway. But we've got to have those meetings. We've got to, because some people, I've come across some that can't read, and given them cassette tapes, and that tells you how long I've been in the game.
So we've had a lot of really good feedback just on this one question. Yes, sir.
I'm Eric, GSR of the Wilmington Island Serenity Group in Savannah. I'm going to change the subject. But on the topic of big book meetings, what my group did was we were doing a 12 and 12 meeting forever, and we were finding it dry and repetitive. So at our last group conscience meeting, we decided that for a time we're going to do something different. In our case, we decided to switch the format to an as-bill sees it. So we decided, let's do something else if we all agree we're not enjoying this. And at some point, we may choose to go back to it. Separate topic. You mentioned the group inventory.
Yes.
I've moved around. I've been a member of different home groups in different states. I've never been part of a group inventory. Curious to know how that works, and if somebody has experience doing one that they found was a constructive exercise. I'm not clear. Is this a survey? Is this a long discussion? Does it take place over several meetings? How does that work?
In my own experience, having facilitated several over time, what I have done is I have asked the group which set of questions they want to use. Quite often they do use the questions that are in the group pamphlet, and I will type them up, and they will get distributed to the group. And then each member of the group anonymously answers whatever questions the group has decided are appropriate for their group. Okay? And they give them to the facilitator in advance. Then they set aside a time that's not their group conscience time. It's not their meeting time. It could be anything. You can make it a special time. You could make it a cookout, and then we're doing this. It's entirely up to your group. No two have ever been the same. But in general, what I have done, and I certainly invite all of you to share any experience you may have had, but what I have done is I have taken a look at all of these questions, and when I have a group where all of the answers are similar, that doesn't need to be addressed. Everybody in the group actually thinks the same way about this thing right here. But when we get to a question that we've got some people over here that think this way and some people over here think that way, then it's my job to take that to the group and say, okay, we've got a differing opinion in your group. Would you like, as a group, to consider doing this right here in a different manner? And it's a yes or no question, you know? And I have seen all kinds of things. Well, we've got cussing in the group. Do we want to address that in a different manner? So, the last group inventory that I did, that was a really big deal. They had people that cussed in the group. They had something in their script about not cussing in the group. Does anybody recognize that kind of thing? There you go. So people were still cussing, but they were still reading, and nobody was enforcing it, and how do they want to handle it? And I don't remember what question that was asked, but this specific thing came up in the question, and so my question to the group was, do you want to handle this situation in a different fashion? This is not the time to make a decision on how you're going to handle it. This is a time to take a look at what needs to be addressed. Okay? So we have now identified a problem that as a group you have collectively said we disagree on, and at a future business meeting you will make a decision on how you want to change what you're doing about that issue. Does that make sense to you? So yes, it's an overtime thing. It starts with the group deciding to have an inventory. And then the group has to decide who's going to facilitate that inventory, and then what kind of questions they want to use on that inventory, and then the process and when they're going to do it. So the process is over time, or at least that has been my experience. And I would invite any of you who have had group inventory experience who want to share to please come to the microphone and do so.
Derek Alcoholic, what up, my people? What up, y'all? My experience with the group inventory was pretty much, you covered it pretty well. But what we did was we used the traditions, and the questions line up with the traditions, and we used the traditions and compared them to how we're actually operating as a group to see the effectiveness of carrying the message to the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, message of a spiritual awakening to all, and how well are we carrying that message as a group. We involve members in the district, for instance, DCMs, as anybody arbitrary outside the group, to do the facilitating of the group inventory. And it also, again, introduces the group to those members who, unless they come to service events or anything like that, they really don't know who those members representing the area or the district are until you bring them in and things like that. So it's really a bonding and a building experience, especially after you see those pain points in carrying the message. And what we did after that was we built a committee to address those pain points, and then the committee brought that to the group conscience as a whole, and we discussed that in our group conscience. So that's my experience.
Thank you for sharing.
I'm still Wayne. I'm still an alcoholic. You know, but they're one above cursing. I've been to a few groups that has put in no cursing in our meetings. Well, when they did that, it was up to the chairperson, if somebody started cursing, to cut them off right then and there. You know, it was because the meeting was, it went through the group conscience and everything, and they said, no, we don't want cussing. Well, when somebody starts cussing in the meeting, it's up to the chairperson to stop it, not let it continue. Excuse me, sir, do you mind stopping, because our group has no cussing and you're cussing? Can you continue without it, or please be quiet? That's the way we decided to do it back.
And it is ultimately up to every group to decide how they want to deal with any issue they have in their group. The group conscience is always right. Any other questions?
My name is Claire. I'm an alcoholic from the Triangle Club. My home group is the Keep It Simple Women's Group at the Triangle Club, and sometimes we have men come in, and it's kind of an issue. I personally want to welcome everybody. I feel like that's AA's thing, but
some women don't like it. I just want to hear what other opinions people have.
You want opinions? Oh, my goodness.
I'm Ashley Parks. I'm an alcoholic. And in a situation like that, you don't want to turn away, especially if it's, I was a paper signer, so I'm just going to say it. You know, that's how I got here, and I'm grateful today for that. But you don't want to turn anybody away. And with it being, I have experience in women's groups, apparently. But I have found the best solution to that is, you know, let them know, okay, look, I'm going to give you some meetings, a meeting schedule here, and we're going to find you some men's meetings, some co-ed meetings, and we'll let you stay this one time. But you got to understand this is a women's meeting. But, you know, we're here, we're responsible, I feel. You know, so I just had to share on that. Thanks for letting me share.
So GSO does acknowledge specialty groups like women's meetings, men's meetings, LGBTQ meetings, a variety of specialized meetings. They do, okay? But everybody needs to be welcome. If more often than not, I have seen that if a man comes to a woman's meeting and I'm going to drink, I need a meeting, I have never seen them be turned away. If they are turned away, that is not Alcoholics Anonymous. We need to welcome everyone, and our purpose is to be there for the next suffering alcoholic. So usually, though, if you tell them, no, but there's another meeting in 30 minutes or whatever, they'll wait. Most of the time, men do not want to be in women's meetings, but we don't want to turn them away. We don't. Yes, sir.
Hey, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, we have several women's groups in our hometown and all that, but on the meeting schedules for your area and stuff like that, you can put that it's a closed meeting. And then, you know, they just can't come into a closed meeting.
A closed meeting is limited to persons who have a desire to stop drinking. It does not limit the gender. A closed meeting is limited to persons who have a desire to stop drinking.
Thank you for coming,
yeah.
Me, Liz.
Yeah.
Hey, family, I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic. Excuse my underwear. So what I was shown by my first sponsor, like we have in our city, we have a women's meeting and a men's meeting, two different locations at the same exact time. It's not often, but when it does happen, if a woman comes to the men's meeting, what I was shown by my sponsor was welcome the person and ask them to stay outside and then have like a quick group conscious. Hey, go inside, ask all the men. Hey, we have a woman outside. She's new to the program. She doesn't know the area. Are you guys all right with us having an open meeting? If the group says yes, we bring her in, you know, show respect to the woman, because obviously we talk about the opposing sex. In a men's meeting, we might talk about our wives, women's meeting, I don't know what y'all talk about. You know what I'm saying? But present it to the group or to the, like for us, present it to the men that are in the room and ask them, are you all right with it? If not, have somebody give her directions to the women's meeting, but every city's not like ours. We might have it on opposing nights. So we always leave it up to the members that are in the room actively.
The group conscience.
Yes, like a short one, you know, like right now.
I got you.
Yeah, I'm Kurt. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Going back to the subject of cussing, there are some people, their family cussed as they were coming up. Their peer group cussed as they were coming up, as they were getting into their adulthood. It's the way they speak. It's the way they would share. It's going to be in there. And if we're welcoming to all, our home group doesn't have a word about cussing in our script. But I think that needs to be considered by people when they're, you know, in terms of welcoming all people. If that person has a true desire to stop drinking, maybe, you know, it's possible to talk with them after the meeting separately. And also, giving too much responsibility to a chairperson often falls flat because True, it's their responsibility, but a lot of people who chair a meeting are not into being that way with individuals and saying, well, you have to stop cussing if you don't stop. You know, a lot of our chairpersons wouldn't feel comfortable with that to begin with. So that's my two cents. Thank you.
Well, we're not making a decision on how we're going to handle that. We're just sharing our experience with whatever we need to share our experience on today. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name's Sharon, 14D. On the women's meeting, then I want to make a statement after because that's just who I am. But we do have a women's group, and I'm a small group, and we do have men that show up, and we go yes, no. And we allow them to stay, you know, and then we have a man, one of our men in the group, that has allowed us to give his phone number if that happens. So we have a person right there they can contact. Here you go. You know, you're allowed to say if you're welcome. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But one time. Now, if they come back, we do have some people that are court-ordered, and maybe that's the only meeting they can get to, and they need that paper signed. I'm not going to just sign their paper. You're going to come in. You're going to sit down, and you're going to listen to us. You know, because we're talking recovery. I don't care what gender you are. It's recovery. I'm not talking about my cycle, which I'm way over that. I'm not talking about none of that stuff. I'm talking AA. So I don't know what people think a women's group is, but I'm going to tell you what one is. All right. And I just want to make a statement about tomorrow. Please, 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 please. You are GSR sitting here. These people that are upstanding for delegate have put a lot of thought into it. This is a service position they want to do. I don't care if you got a football game on, basketball game on, NASCAR racing, whatever y'all watch. Please don't change your vote to get out of here. Consider the person up there running. Thank you.
Hey, my name is Rosa. I'm with District 11C. I'm going to share my experience, and hopefully not my opinion, but I don't know what's going to come out in regards to the women's meeting. So my experience with that is similar to what everybody has mentioned, but the women's group that I was at, they were adamant about not letting the men stay. That didn't mean that we turned them away. A woman who was comfortable speaking with a gentleman would go outside with a schedule, you know, and let them know the next meeting is at noon. So do you need someone to talk to? We could have a meeting out here right now. So that's already been said. But what I want to say about this is I am a member, an active member of AA, and I know what the group conscience represents. So there are actually, where I got sober in California, there was an excellent men's meeting. And I offered on many occasions to crash the meeting. And I was told, no, you don't do that. And there's an awesome meeting in Atlanta, Boys to Men. Anybody here with Boys to Men? Is that you? Oh, my God, I want to crash your meeting. Can I crash your meeting? But I understood as an active member, right? And I get it. If I want to drink, I can show up to that meeting. But as a responsible member, I don't want to violate that group conscience, and I want to give them their space. You know, and so I think that's all I'll share about that. But for me, the women's meeting is just a more intimate meeting, and I share things that I would otherwise not share. So to me, it's a special space. And unless, like, I'm going to drink, I would want to that space respected. Obviously not turning people away, but I don't know. I don't think that helps you. I just need it. I need to write inventory. All right, I'm done.
More often than not, I see people show up to a meeting that they didn't know. I didn't know it was a men's meeting. I didn't know it was a women's meeting. They just didn't know. They just knew there was a meeting, and they just showed up. And that's usually what I have seen anyway. Well, we have just about run out of time here. I want to thank you all for your participation. Give yourself a hand. Damon, would you turn the little thing back on, because we're going to do the responsibility statement. There it is. So I want everyone to stand. We're going to close with the responsibility pledge. Deep breath. Pledge. I am responsible When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. Woohoo! Thank you so much.